Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Feed Your Head. I'm Ruthanna Marte Theo, and my first guest tonight is Reverend Ronald French. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me. This is wonderful.
Well, we've talked before. We've done even a short interview before, so I feel like I know you, but I want listeners to, to an extent. But I want our listeners to know something about you. So, Reverend Ron is the founder and pastor of Access Sanctuary and Chapels, and that is .com also. And why don't you give us a little bit of background? Because you're a reverend, so did you start out in a Christian church or something?
No. No. Actually, I hate to say it, but in reality, it would be yes. Back in 1999, I kind of had this calling in my head about, like, I wanted to do something for the public. I've seen a lot of ministers really act like douchebags to people, and I was like, you know, when someone wants to get married, they should. So I went off and I read an article about the mail order ministry, which was called the Universal Life Church over in Modesto.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I donated about $20, and I got a little certificate that says that I'm ordained in their ministry. And it's very liberal. You know, anybody can sign up, and they take all religions, even though it's a Christian-based group. And I started to, for over 10 years now, I've been putting my username as Reverend Ron. Just to let people know, hey, you know, I have a problem marrying people. I'm listed in Witchbox. I'm listed in the ULC.net Registry of Ministers. And I tell people, you know, I have a problem marrying you in the state of Florida, because in the state of Florida, they recognize my minister's license through the ULC. Now, the thing was, I've also noticed other Christian groups that are very liberal, like the UU and Unity. And I couldn't understand why there was no real interfaith or universalist church that was truly, interfaith or multiple faiths based. And that's where I kind of came up with a formula for Access Sanctuary and Chapels down the road. And once I formulated it, I became a reverend in my own church. So now I can say I'm truly eclectic. I mean, I'm the president of the holding company. I have a Jew for a secretary, and I have a Catholic for a vice president, and we still have an officer position available over in our treasurer department. And in our developments, when we go and get our board will be by local and regional religious leaders that will have a vote, and that too would be very eclectic unto itself.
Well, now you mentioned the Jewish faith and the Christians. Where do you stand?
I'm a Satanist. I'm a left-hand path. I also consider myself an occultist. I don't limit myself to a single paradigm. I take in a lot of other belief systems for myself and as myself. I mean, I study Buddhism, Taoism. And because I was raised Catholic, you know, you kind of know what you grew up with, you know.
Right.
So there are some aspects of Christianity that could, you know, can work for you if it suits you. And but I started off with most Satanists have was the Anton LaVey Satanic Bible, and I started to meet other people from the left hand path in the left hand path community, and it dealt with very similar philosophies that I kind of have now, and that is deal with the center and work your way out. But that's a very base premise for a lot of different belief systems, not just left-hand path. But, you know, but the thing is, I also I didn't live too far from Salem, Massachusetts. So I mean, I grew up with witches and witchcraft and pagans. And so for me, it wasn't a big jump to, you know, to be calling myself an occultist, because I have studied different, studiously studied different religions. I mean, Crowley was my biggest study of all, you know, with his, you know, dealing with his biography and his, you know, Thelema and Golden Dawn and the OTO. You know, to me, you know, he was certainly the innovator for a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I admire him immensely. Yeah, Crowley was a formative figure for an ex of mine, actually. And through him, I learned quite a bit. I never, you know, joined the OTO or anything, but I did learn quite a bit. But so also, you know, the Satanic Bible is, for people who've never read it, I really suggest you do, and you're going to be surprised. I was, anyway. It was, you know, not what I thought it would be at all.
And that's the funny part. I always tell people, like, especially if you have, and the funny thing is, I'm going to probably sing to a choir if I mention this. If you ever debate a Christian, it's not too hard. If you grab the Bible and you read it, you now know the rule book of what a Christian is supposed to do. It's a singularity, it's a base paradigm, and it's a dichotomy. There you have it. Now, once you know it, or at least you read it, then when you have someone who's a Christian and they give you a hard time, you can turn your tables around on them real quick and go back and forth. But one of the things I do when I deal with people who choose not to educate themselves into another religion and debate that person, I always tell, like I say, again, with a Christian, I'll say, well, I have no problem going to your church, which I don't. I can go to any church. In fact, I kind of know several pastors in my local area, and I can sit front and center of any church and absorb the atmosphere and whatnot. But will I, you know, will it change me, move me? Will I be born again? And the answer would be no. You know, I mean, I'm so grounded as to who and what I am that I can tell now, when I talk to people, how grounded they are in their own beliefs, even if it's a belief in your own self. You know, you can be just spiritual without a direction, for instance, but if you're well grounded, you know, you are who you are.
Exactly.
And when I dealt with a lot of different store owners of the metaphysical and witch shops, pagan shops, metaphysical shops, and what I've seen is, I told one person, her name was Wendell. We're down in Fort Myers. She had a shop called Mana, which is really nice. And I told her I was a Satanist. She looked at me and said, "You're cool." You know, I mean, she's a witch. You know, she has her own, you know, altar and what have you, and everything else in her own backyard type of thing. So for her to say that to me was my first. This is like over, gosh, almost 15 years ago. And her response kind of blew me away. But in the same respect, it was an enlightenment, too, because I found someone who was so sound in what they believed that it didn't matter who stood before them. They knew who they were, and to have someone who's of a different ideology in front of them was more novelty than a threat. You know, and I thought that was, you know, that was mind-blowing unto itself to me. And I'm kind of the same way with a lot of different people. I met a girl in my church who had came from the Pacific Islands, and they had, like, we have Valentine holidays, you know, we have holidays for Valentine's Day and some other Hallmark type of holidays. And
Hallmark.
In her holidays, in the Pacific Islands where she's from, actually came from the mores of her native beliefs of the volcano god, you know, and that was like blow my mind. I mean, that's freaking awesome. Do I see that as a threat? No, I think that's wonderful, you know, and for me, I embrace the role of the adversary, because the adversary always questions, and what you're saying again with the Satanic Bible, when you read it, and if you're actually a little bit scholarly, studious, or even worldly, you would see a lot of influences of Crowley, Mark Twain, Nietzsche, and several other writers, even like Ayn Rand. So you have a certain level, heightened level, perhaps, of objectivism, where you do are selfish, but in order to help people around you and the world around you, you have to take care of the person.
You have to take care of yourself.
Exactly. But again, this is not necessarily satanic. This is just basic, fundamental common sense. And the funny part is a lot of people seem to lose that in general. Now, and when I was developing Access Sanctuary and Chapels, I was sitting there going, I've met a lot of people who exercise the total opposite and found that totally okay. I understand altruism. Altruism, I understand it. But again, when I see altruism being done and as a heightened form of self, for instance, there's no wrong to it. I did a video a while back where I was really not upset, but I was kind of like scratching my head. If you're going to do something to help someone you don't know, my attitude is, what have you done to help someone that you have known, or someone who's local versus someone who's far away, And it brings up a lot of topic of debate. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're going to do something community-wise, help your local community. Start with arm's reach, then your neighborhood, then a half a mile, then a mile away, that kind of thing. And literal, not just metaphorical, because at that point, you have a better grasp of your community, and they have a better grasp of who you are. And when I seen this thing with this, the Connecticut shooting, for instance, I thought it was kind of, I saw it for what it was. It was more than just a shooting.
Oh, yeah.
It was a catalyst for gun control. It was a catalyst for, and I see things differently. Even with the left-hand path community, I see things differently. So I don't get along with Satanists either. So for me, it's like I'm totally on my own, except for the people that understand what I'm saying or read between the lines. Because I didn't lose all the friends I have, like, say, on Facebook. I think I lost maybe 20 people, and I got kicked out of two groups. But
you're doing something right then. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, 2,000 people said I'm okay, and the a percentage of a percent thought maybe not. and my attitude, and I tell people now in my videos, especially if they're rant videos, if you don't like me, go away from me. Don't affiliate yourself with me. Don't associate yourself with me. Do the thing. Take yourself away from me. Go and turn around and go walk away, because I will not be right for you. And a lot of people can't do that for whatever reason, some cases, and other times, I've seen a small exodus of people, and that happens. But again, but when I talk about stuff dealing with me in my Reverend Ronald channel, it deals with me. And it's my perspective, it's a personal perspective. When it comes to my church, I do take it as a separate entity, even though I've been told by a lot of respected people or people I respect that sometimes they can't, a lot of people won't differentiate me from the church. But I'm thinking to myself, well, the church right now is an ideal, but essentially what I'm trying to do with the church is create a reality from virtuality. I want to do an Epcot Center where you have a main sanctuary like the Unitarian Universalists do, or even Unity, but to actually have about 100 or 200 acres of land where you have designated areas for the singularities. So if you've ever been to the Epcot Center, there's always a little Japan, a little China, a little Australia. Well, imagine if you would, this section here, it has an acre or so or two for the white lighters. You have the pagans and the witches, for instance. You have your Afro-Latinos section here. We have, Santa Marta, you have Palo, you have Santeria, you might have Voodoo and Houdon. You might have another section that deals with Egyptian or the Egyptian mythos or Norse mythos. Mm-hmm. You'll have things that deal with, so it's, and I deal right now on my online fellowship, I have over 60 religions presented. So at that point, it's kind of like, I can be very busy if I'm in the right location. And,
I have a question about that. What would be the advantage of some pagan group deciding that they were, you know, going to, they were thinking about hooking up. Say that you've got the land, so you've got the space, and
yep.
everybody gets, you know, so many feet by so many feet to build their own whatever. What would be the advantage to a group to join under this umbrella, Ron?
Okay, well, for one thing, Access would be building it. It wouldn't be a group building something on you know, property
uh-huh.
that was owned by the church, but the church itself would actually have its own chapels. And if you're a church of 20 people, for instance, you know, there could be a chapel for you. But if you're a church of 7 churches, well, then chances are you'd be sharing a church or a chapel with other organizations. The fine-tuning of the bylaws haven't been really established on that until it actually happens. You know, situations can change geographically, you know, different organizations, different groups.
No, but there's a lot of people just taking Florida, which is where you are right now. Now, I'm just wondering what would be the advantage? Say there's this group they're renting a space every new moon and every full moon. In not too far from you, what would be the advantage of them coming over to Access Sanctuaries and Chapels?
The similar advantage of renting out an Elk Hall or KFC, except this time you have an environment that is designed by, with the emphasis of, uncommon and minority belief systems. So what you do would not shock or offend me or my organization because, again, when you're dealing with the occult, if you would, that's where you're going to be at home. I mean,
out for following, for practicing your religion, because some of our people have been thrown out of different rental spaces because of what they
sure.
do. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, that's
a
good one. Yeah.
If you really organize yourself, like I did, you can rent out or make use of like public libraries and other government facilities. They can't turn you down. So some places, like the government has its own rental for auditoriums. If you have the funds for it, you can actually rent it out and you know, for public service. I know a lot of the startup churches actually use elementary schools as a service. And they do their revivals in a cafeteria in a school. You know, the best part and the more secure part, ironically, is a government place for any startup group if there's, you know, because they can't say no.
Right. They can have some restrictions, but,
they can't say no.
Right.
You know,
most of our biggies was always candles, you know, and so most places... Well, some churches didn't care because churches are used to candles. But we had a lot of good experiences renting churches.
Well, one of the things I noticed, I had pagans on it. This is why I belong to over, I think, over 600 groups from pagans, which is Satanism. I have 2 Illuminati groups, or 3, I think, that I belong to. I have, you know, I know a lot of the underground groups because they come to me now. And it's kind of, you know, refreshing in a way. I had some Ascension group giving me a hard time. And next thing I know, I had you know, the Illuminati Council, you know, come after them. And it was kind of weird because I got sucked into some type of drama that I didn't even, you know, I was indirectly, I had no way of knowing who these people were. I actually had to do some research. And there actually was an Egyptian belief that where the planet of Nerebu comes by, and they were to ascend into Nerebu, and they have a very Egyptian theme behind what they're doing. They kind of remind me of those Nike sneaker type people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was giving me so much credit. I was the high priest of this and that, and I was bilking people in millions of dollars. And I'm thinking, really? You know, I have a 1994 van, man. I don't know where am I hiding this money, you know? Anytime I get people who try to discredit me by telling the world that I'm, you know, raking into millions, I think my church so far made about $200 last year. And the church actually spent the money on other fundraising materials and some other equipment so that we can make our own fundraising materials, you know. So for me, I'm kind of thinking, you know, yeah, I'm really milking the cash here.
What they don't get is that so much of this is just right out of pocket.
You have a mission,
and that's the way. Exactly, no, that's the way it is. I mean, you pay your own,
you pay
other areas, but.
Well, yeah. I do have on Indiegogo. I have on my website two fundraisers. One's for the 501c, and one's for our land, land fundraiser. And people go, why do you need a 501c as a church if the church is naturally tax exempt? And a lot of people who don't know anything about tax exempt status or the 501c, churches are kind of like a hybrid in between. I went to a guy who develops 501c's. He's an attorney, and he's great, smart on 501c. But when it came to churches, he actually kind of strung me along and then left me hanging. Because I had to talk to the IRS. Literally, I was on a phone call talking to him about it, and I told him my story, and they laughed. They're like, "You don't have to do a damn thing. Churches are naturally under tax exempt." Naturally under the 501c if you run your church as a charitable organization, you know. And all this, it's just bookkeeping and, you know, dotting your I's and crossing your T's, which that's not too hard to do, you know.
Right.
But if you want to take advantage of, let's say, a thing called Google Grants. Well, Google Grants, if you've got your 501c number, they'll give you a $10,000 a month in advertisement. So, when you're a church and you're tax exempt, that's wonderful, but you don't have a 501c number. So you have to get a 501c number if you want to take advantage of some of the 501c programs, which is totally separate from the actual structure of your tax exempt status. Because now, when you get it, at least it shows you're compliant.
Right.
And let's say you do have a benefactor who donates largely to your organization, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000. It's more advantageous for them to get a 501c number for their tax write-off than a church number where the IRS, if they decide to play hardball with the donor, would hold back on that tax exemption while put the church under scrutiny for audit. Or something like that, which would delay their, give your donor a hard time, pretty much. So basically, that's where it comes from. By the time I did the fundraiser for the 501c, for instance, your initial application is about $300, but it costs as much, if not double that, to have someone who actually writes the 501c paperwork. Okay, and so. I initially was asking for about $1,000. And, a friend of mine chimed in, said, it's only $200 for electrical filing. But at the time that I did all this, I called the IRS up, and they're like, no, we're a little behind on electric filing, because electric filing is like $200.
Mm-hmm.
And, but again, it still has to be written by somebody and submitted by someone. And, of course, they want their fee. And so I went off and, I checked into it, but their electronic system was not up to snuff yet, as last I checked. So I'm still current, still do it the old-fashioned way by doing it by the mail. And if you do it by the mail, once it is established, they actually increase the fees by $100, and that's like $400 now to apply for a 501c. And
I did it years ago, and paid somebody, a firm, to do it. So
yeah.
Several hundred dollars more, but there was no problem that way. Now I'm actually, the whole tax exempt thing sort of bothers me with churches of any kind, any kind of religious thing, because I think that we're supposed to keep separate. But I understand, as long as everybody else is doing it, why not? I get that. But
for me, I think it's a mutual benefit, but it helps the donor more than it helps the church. Mm-hmm. Again, the church, you know, it can.
For any potential donor, for sure.
Well, true, but you're not just looking at money. You're looking at land. You're looking at. I have a couple of friends of mine who are, let's say, old money, and they were explaining to me how you don't have to buy farmland and build new. You can actually go to an industrial park and find a building that went to India, and they're just paying property tax. You can convince them to donate your building. Find a salvage company to tear down the building for all the copper and steel. They'll cut you a check, and then you can go off, find a builder, and use that money to build what you want.
Yeah, what a good idea.
Well, in Florida, there's an impact fee for new construction. So when I talked to a builder, a couple of builders, they all said the same thing. They said, well, because your land has already been developed, you don't have to pay the $10,000 or $20,000 impact fee. These have been paid. And they said that you probably will have pavement for your parking lot, and that and that pavement actually costs more than your building sometimes. So it kind of behooves you to shop around as to where you want to be and, you know, where you want to set up. Personally, I hate to say it, I'm very elemental. I would love to have 100 or 200 acres of farmland and have at least half of it full of tall trees and brush.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how I am. But,
do you envision this in Florida?
I'm sorry?
Do you envision it in Florida, the first place?
The first one I like to see in Florida, but I'm not too sure where exactly. You know, it depends on how the community takes you. And there's a lot of social phenomena I bump into. People love the word coexist, and they'll give me a thumbs up, and they might want to be a friend with me, and that's fine. Other people might like what I'm doing regarding the church or how I'm structuring this church, or at least attempting to, or our goals to, and our fiscal level of things. But when it comes to me, oh my God, I'm a nightmare. I'm a horror. And I think what it came down to in my own self-realization is, you know, I grew up with bikers, and when I first moved into the Fort Myers area, I used to hang out at my buddy's tattoo shop, and I had all kinds of bikers. You had outlaws, warlocks, you name it. You know, all these guys coming through. And, you know, you just hang out and you talk to them. But the thing is, they have a certain, not just an aura, but a certain code. And basically, bullshit and drama is at a different level with these guys. I mean, they'll have it, but not at the level you see with pagans and witches. Pagans and witches would just get a punch in the face or a pipe smack across their head because they wouldn't deal with that kind of shit. So, you know, it's a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I kind of adopted that code because I'm thinking, you know, if it's small and petty and stupid, don't even bother with it. Move on. Get on with yourself. And, like, I had a debate with someone December 28th, for instance, and it was a religious leader over in down in Sarasota, and you know, she hopped on my feed, for instance. This is a Facebook drama thing, and I told her, you know, she said, well, I could just don't post on my wall, and she still did. So I kicked her off. I, if you're not grown up to turn you away, or if you're not grown enough to or smart enough to know how to set your settings so you don't see me post, then just get rid of me as a friend. I mean, you know, there are simple solutions, but a lot of people like to drag out the drama. So what I do is, when people put me under scrutiny, you know, you're a pastor, you're a reverend, or you're a title, so we're going to put you up to this title. Well, I didn't put myself up to this title; they did. And when I deal with people who are of a title themselves, you know, high priestess, a magister, high priest, whatever, you know, I'm the high priest, jelly bean, whatever, I'll turn that table on you quicker than a heartbeat and do the same to you. So I did this with this lady. She's supposed to be some big wig of an organization down here locally. And I just simply screen picked it, and then I just did a rant video, and then I exposed it. And that's what I do. I expose people for their bullshit. You know, and the thing is, people try to do that with me. You know, oh, you're this or you're that. But when they say I'm this and that, what's the this and that? The this and that is I'm a meanie, I'm outspoken, I'm rude, I'm uncouth. I'm obtuse, and I'm unrepentant over it. I am not going to make excuses for my actions. I'm not going to say I had a bad day and I didn't have my coffee. I'm going to say, yes, I called you an asshole because you're acting like an asshole. Yeah. And the funny part is, no minister, no pastor talks like this to their people or any people. And the funny part is, again, it's done. I'm done with the bullshit. You know, it's kind of like, I understand if you want to bring in people, you want to be nice to everybody. This guy, I think he calls himself Reverend Don, the witch school, and I like him. But the thing is, he reminds me of the smiley evangelist. You know who I'm talking about over in?
I know him very well. Yes, I know.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, Reverend Don, he's kind of like him in a way. They're very monotone in their talk.
Yeah.
You know, they speak without expression. And I'm thinking it's very dull, but it's also hypnotic. And I talked to a friend who does hypnosis, and he says it's actually a method of hypnosis, whether they do it cognitively or subconsciously. So I said, oh, okay. So it's like harmonics. They tune in how they speak to reach into your mind, whatever receptors pick up that type of tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, interesting. Now me, I'm just me. You can take me or leave me. And I always tell people, please leave. And those who accept me or those who take me in, they have a better understanding where I'm coming from because I'm not really filling up the air full of bullshit. You know, this is what my goals are. This is how I'm going about it. And, you know, if I see something cool, great. If I see something wrong, I'm going to say something. If I'm wrong, I'll own up to it. I will wear pie on my face. I'll even make it a public apology if I see myself as incorrect. But I won't pull down a video if I am incorrect either, because I want. You know, my attitude is this: if anyone's going to put any reverend or pastor or any religious person up on some kind of pedestal as a weapon or shield, or even to say, "Hey, good guy," my attitude is: if you're going to do that and you say, "Well, you're a bad example," I'll be saying, "Well, no, I'm not. I'm a good example because now I'm showing you how to be a better person than me."
The titles really bother me. I mean, sure, I'm a reverend and I'm a high priestess, and you don't see me using the titles because that's really not the major focus of my life. But I know that a lot of people have.
Oh my God! Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, they feel that I've betrayed them or something. They like that I'm dissing them because they want so much to say that they're a priestess. Or a priest or something, and then if I don't use the title every time I turn around, they think that I'm being disrespectful to them. Well,
that's a singularity. That's like if you I knew a gal who's a Gunnarian, for instance, and she says she's a high priestess, and I'm thinking, okay, she's got a coven of 20 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and at the time she had none, you know, so I was kind of like, oh, so you're the master of yourself, wonderful. Now she has, you know, and of course what I realized once I started looking into the paradigm and everything else, it was kind of like a Jedi thing, is one teacher, one student. So when she had her one student, I was like, oh, you got one student. You know, it's kind of like being the manager of like 7-Eleven or Circle K, and you have one person underneath you and you're a titled manager. It's kind of like, I understand, my attitude is this: a reverend title is only as good as as what you make of it.
Right.
And like I put myself out there to marry people. I haven't married anyone, but I tell
weddings.
People.
I love doing weddings, just because they're fun.
And that's how I see it. How can you go off and call yourself something, not live up to it? Satanists are big like that, especially theistic Satanists. Satanism is like divided up in many different parts of a pie. You have your atheistic, deistic, and theistic. Mm-hmm. So you have your atheists or your LeVays, you know, your Ayn Rands, the very analytical, philosophical types. You have deistic ones, which I could loosely term it as Luciferians, where they believe there's a force rather than a deity. Then you have your theistic ones, which are theistic and polytheistic. It almost falls into demonology and demonology in some cases, but they actually believe in a sentient, you know, being. But the funny part is when I deal with the theists in particular, I had this done in front of me. I had a lady say, "Oh, I went to the ULC and I'm a reverend. I'm a satanic reverend." And I questioned her on. I said, "How did you become a reverend? Call yourself a satanic reverend if no one in the satanic community recognizes you as such?" You know, and that's how a lot of churches make reverends. They appoint you it. You know, your community does, your church board members do. I mean, this is a big thing. You know, now granted, it's been kind of like whitewashed and spit on by the ULC because they made a very open paradigm. I mean, their paradigm is to do what's right. You know, so they made it the most liberal church to do this with. And with me, I've had people ask me, a good friend of mine, Felix, who I've known on the internet for about 6-7 years now. She's over in the UK. And I was asked, "Hey, you know, what are you going to do with your minister's classes with Access?" I said, "You know, when we start building Access, physically doing it, having the people and the organizations coming in, that's when I'll structure the minister class, because it wouldn't be just like, you know, a reverend, a this. You know, I kind of have it loosely done where I'm going to have, you know, if you came in with a group of 20 people and you're doing your meeting, well, the civic leader of that group would be a chaplain in my eyes, because you're civically doing something. We have a thing here called Spiral Scouts, which is the pagans' version of Cub Scouts.
Pete Pathfinder from Washington was the initiator of Spiral Scouts, yes.
Yeah. You know, so if you had someone who was a scout leader, for instance, or they were the head chapter of that local area, yeah, they would be appointed as a chaplain. It's not an honorary. It's honorary, but it also can be applicable for your basic minister rights. But as if you want to be a minister further, like a minister, a reverend, like a first minister, that type of thing, that would be based upon, you know, your life skills and your life accomplishments, but also about your knowledge of other religions and how you work with other
ones. But shouldn't it be based, like, if somebody comes in from, I can't even give you an example, but okay, say some druids. And
right.
Have their own congregation and everything. But it seems to me that their leaders, it should be based on what druidry says it makes a leader.
Well, if you had like the priest or high priest, whatever ranking system they have for that religion to make the person the top dog, what I'm getting at is that top dog would get that recognition from Access. If they're going to go as a part of Access, as part of their landscape, you know, they're going to, you know, have an area for the druids, for instance.
Yeah.
But that's just automatically. Now, if someone who wants to be a minister, do weddings or do something religious in that respect, or even create their own group, like say you travel the world and you, I have a friend, John Alley, over in Salem, Massachusetts. He actually lives in New York, but he does a lot in Salem. And he started his own tradition, okay? So you have the shadow tradition or the John Alley tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so right then and there, he already has something he created, you know, and he developed it. And that, you know, to me, if he had decided that he wanted to bring his church with Access, when Access has its own, its own physical, fruition, then John would automatically be a chaplain just for the fact that he's affiliated. And then if he wants to do it, trying to keep my thought here. If he wants to, you know, evolve in Access, for instance, it's about a developmental program about understanding other belief systems and helping other people. We're dealing a lot more civically than we are doing about religion.
To segue into, I know you're concerned about the environment to a point, and you're talking about, you know, several acres, maybe some farmland and some woods and this type of thing.
Yeah.
So how would that figure in with your environmental concerns and the buildings and all of this?
The irony was a lady, acquaintance of mine, who she coined the term for me, and I totally forgot about it, was sustainability. I want Access Sanctuary and Chapels to run on wind power, solar power, any other alternative power. It would be like HHO or brown gas or hydrogen. Just things of that nature, magnetic motors. And in fact, what I've done, this is multifaceted. So when I'm dealing with a church, I'm dealing with, like I said, it's not just about religion. You have the religions already out there. The buildings that I'm looking for or to build are there too. They're domes or dome structures, which are F3 and F3 tornado and F5 hurricane resistant. Well, they resist up to over 200 mile an hour winds. So you have so even that place can be a shelter. But when he talks about the environment, well, the buildings are environmentally safe because they're environmentally safe, but they're also these buildings are designed to last between 1 and 500 years. So they're above and beyond any conventional structure. And they don't use wood. This is all concrete and rebar. So you're looking at saving the environment in that respect. And then you have, I'm trying to think here, but if you want to, like, say, renewable energy, that's a big thing. So I wanted to have the church literally be autonomous from any utility. The fact that, with the technology today, you can actually have a library with a computer room, and the computer room would actually be on the internet, and you can do this through broadband. It can all be through wireless. There are many avenues available. There's even satellite, some parts of Florida, still farm country, and they actually have satellites for just like your satellite TV, but they have satellite cable TV or satellite internet.
Yeah,
and it's kind of above DSL but below cable, so it's high speed, but it has its limitations. It's kind of like 4G, let's say. Then you have I have a website on that. That's the other thing I was getting at. I have about six or eight, I think I have almost 9 websites to integrate with Access Sanctuary Chapels. So if you ever go to the main website, you have your typical networking social ones, like your Twitter, your LinkedIn, your WordPress. But you also have things like, I have free energy and ideas. I have I have a page for domes, which links to all the different dome technology that's been out for the last 50 years. This is multifaceted. I mean, this onto itself leads to other programs I want to do. I want to do things like, it's going to sound funny, I have a farmland and kind of create an atmosphere for, like, say, excommunicated or shunned Amish. I want to have, it sounds funny, but I have a huge Amish community down here, and I met a lot of ex-Amish down here too, which is kind of equally interesting because I'm starting to learn their culture, I mean, literally, the lady next to me last weekend was ex-Amish. She was shunned, so it was really interesting when I got to pick her brain about the culture she left. And then I wanted to do was something that was called very similar to, it was a Waldorf education, which is a...
Steiner Waldorf?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and this is where... people, they learn at their own pace. I mean, I remember growing up in school, I hated school. You had to go to the same classroom all the time. You were sitting in the same desk. You were looking at the chalkboard. Your eyes rolled the back of your head. And you're thinking, I want to be in Disneyland, And imagine, if you would, you're in third grade and your class is underneath the oak tree. The next time you're in class, you're outside somewhere else. You're at the pavilion. You're at the... state park. Your environment's always changing. Your class is going to be the same. It's just that you're constantly being stimulated by the environment around you.
Yeah.
And not only that, but these kids from kindergarten to grade 12 are taught a religion every semester. So you might learn growing up. You're going to learn like over 24, 26 religions in your 12 years of school. no matter what belief you have, you'll understand the other ones.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. I was reading that on their website. And that was something I wanted to mimic. Now, when I talked about people saying, I want to start a private school, and they're like, oh, that's nice. You know, they get the little head nodding, and, you know, good luck for you, you know. And then I mentioned the words like, oh, I want to start my own school of wizards and witchcraft or something, or, you know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, boom, I get a whole line of people getting phone calls. What guy did sign up? And I'm like, well, we're not even built yet, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And but it's just how you coin, you know, how you coin it, how you phrase it, I guess, is how you get your attention with the people. But basically, it's going to, I want to do something like that in the future too, you know. And but you know, these are just aspects. These are all future aspirations. In fact, a lot of them is expounded since the last time I made the list of what our future is. You know, because a lot of the stuff, again, it's all about community. It was about secondary education, whether it be language classes, a reference library, things of that nature. And so to me, it's a lot more than just a church. It would actually be kind of like a micro city of uncommon beliefs. And another thing is, I take notes in a lot of negative, and that's the funny thing about society and the people I deal with that piss me off the most. When I go off and I complain or I see something, I've actually got shut down in a group called OWL in Bradenton. One of the first meetings I was at, I think it was the second or third one, I kind of did a rant, or I was kind of talking about a negative focus on something, and I had someone actually say, oh, no, this is getting a little negative for me here, you know, and it was an eclectic group, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you kind of, if you're going to be unbalanced, if you believe in an economy where there's right and wrong, good and bad, dark, light and dark, my attitude is embrace both. You know, for me, there is none. I mean, it is what it is. You know, you make use of what you have. So if I feel that a crappy day, I'm going to embrace the crappiness and say, get it out, and I'll move on. And the funny part was, when I had someone correct me on that, I was like, whoa, very unbalanced. And that's what killed me, is a lot of people don't take note of the negative. They kind of, like, put it behind them. And then they act surprised when they kind of, you know,
right,
they get a
right.
baseball bat beside their head.
They're denial about it. They just ignore it. And then it comes and bites them in the butt, and they're surprised.
But I take note. So what I do is I take note on a lot of things that go on about how things are structured, how things don't work with other organizations. And I employ it, or I try to implement it for Axis, for its future. So I kind of anticipate the worst before the better, but I prepared for the worst before. I'm striving for the better. It's pretty much more like it. So when I'm dealing with a lot of people, I kind of anticipate the negative actions ahead of time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it works for me. But I always find it funny how I deal with people who kind of get stuck in their own ways. And I'm not going to tell them they're wrong. And they'll do what's right for them. It's just that when it comes to the reality of the world, it's not going to work out the way I see it, just by example.
Right.
You know.
Speaking of realities, I'm going to go off on a different topic right now. We only have 10 minutes.
Okay.
The other day on a show, I had three pagans talking about their beliefs in being armed, as in guns in this country. And, you know, you hear... At least I do, a lot of pros and cons, a lot of cons on being a gun owner. And I'd like for you to, I know you have some strong views on this, I'd like for you to explain where you stand.
Well, okay, outside the fact that I am a constitutionalist, I do believe we have the Second Amendment right. Now, anytime someone wants to say, well, do you really need an AR-15 or an AK-47 to go hunting? To me, that's kind of like saying you need an extra slice of pie weighing 400 pounds. You know, if you want to have an extra slice of pie, you would eat it. My background in firearms, I am a former combat engineer in the United States Army during the Gulf War in 1990 when it first started. I was a small weapons repair in Army National Guard. I was a community police officer for Housing Urban Development, Section 8 Housing Police. And I also worked as a constable in Massachusetts. So I used to go off, and I was chasing deadbeat dads for the Department of Revenue and Child Support Enforcement. So for me, guns were an essential tool for what I do. And I had someone, you know, they're right now talking about regulating how many times it will take, do you really need more than 10 rounds? And I was less than a half second away from having a gunfight, and I already had, at the time, a revolver. And we have this thing called speed loaders, which are kind of like they're round discs to hold bullets so that you can unload and load your revolver quickly. Mm. And I had them lined up because I was expecting to drop six rounds in less than a second on a person, and I had 12 people walking up the street reaching in for their guns. So from my attitude is, yeah, you, if you want to defend yourself, you're going to need as much as you possibly can have. The problem I have is some of the antics that people use or think. Like right now, if you look at that crazy English guy on CNN News, he's off, you know, the gun, the gun, the gun. He's so focused on the gun that he literally, and he's been called out on it several times, and then he whitewashed it really quick. When he does gun statistics, like say for England, what he doesn't do, yeah, gun violence went down in England, but the thing is, violent crime shot up like 80%.
Yes.
And it's illegal in England to defend yourself, where in Florida, you have every right to defend yourself. If someone says, I'm going to kill you in a crowd of people, and he's got a bat in his hand, I drop him with a couple rounds in his head, I don't care. He's dead. He said he's going to hurt me and kill me with it. Right. I'm going to go home and have dinner with family and friends. His family and friends are going to bury him. It's going to be Lex Talionis, the survival of the fittest, and I plan on being fit. And that's how I see it, bottom line, and that's how I see it in perspective. But as a constitutionalist, by someone regulating my civil liberties, it's a Pandora's box. I mean, if you drink, if someone's the anti-gun and you're drinking alcohol, you're a person who likes your whiskey, you go to the bars and you bar hop with your friends. How would you like to go to a bar that can only give you a quarter shot because there might be, and it'll charge you the same. Give you a quarter shot because you might be drunk when you leave and they don't want you to get in your car driving drunk. Or better yet, no matter what car you buy in this country, they cannot go past 35 miles an hour because you might get into a car wreck. And I talked to you about this. We need to outlaw airliners. Hijackers hijack them. That's been going on since the day of flight.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's been proven recently that if you crash them into buildings, you get to kill 3,000 to 5,000 people, not 20 or 26, but 5,000 people die. Now, at that point, that's a good reason to get rid of airliners, because someone might kidnap, take it over and crash into a building and kill 3,000 to 5,000 people. Now, if that sounds a bit ludicrous, that's how it sounds to a person who is a pro-gun advocate, because at that point, you might as well outlaw styluses, pens, pencils, my keyboard, why I mistype my words or misspell my words. Exactly. Yeah, but that's the mindset of the anti-gun people, because they feel as though you're going to blame the instrument, not the person.
You mentioned England, and I have a friend in England who is very concerned, and he had to make sure that I was armed, because he hates the way things are there. And
yeah.
It's like, you know, make sure that you have enough while you can over there. It's like, yes. Isn't it it's strange. The countries that outlawed it, most of them are not happy about it.
Yeah, but the problem is,
I've found, once in a while somebody will come on and say, oh, well, this is wonderful since they, you know, we can't have guns. And it's like, yeah. Okay.
Do you know the number one protest that I seen that did not get any violent actions from the police war?
What was that?
The Second Amendment protest, because everybody showed up with a rifle and a sidearm. Not one cop, not one soldier, not one person got pepper sprayed. Not one cop did anything stupid. Everybody showed up with a weapon, and they walked and they demonstrated their Second Amendment rights. Not one incident.
This. Yeah,
now
the military and the police are very, very for the Second Amendment rights.
Right, but the thing is, those who showed up were also armed. Now, if you dealt with occupied movement, we had a bunch of hippies sitting peacefully. What was the mem? he had a cop spraying people in the face with pepper spray.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm just saying, if you had that kind of civil uprising that was the, you know, the sit-ins and all that, if you combined the two, it would be an interesting output. And I think what's going to happen is if you criminalize people owning guns, you just created a substantial amount of Americans to be criminals. And at that point, you know, I see a lot of things happening. I see a lot of Al Capones of gun running going on, you know, and your grandma, who had her gun forever and a day, will be a criminal. She'll, you know, my attitude is she's not going to change because the law changed.
Right.
You know,
right.
And what I find really embracing is a lot of the sheriffs, there's a huge list of sheriffs, wrote a letter to Obama saying, you pass this, we're not going to enforce it. So even then, the states and the local laws are telling the government to go shove it. So yeah. At that point, it's local government telling the big government to take a hike on our Second Amendment rights. And at that point, you know, so to me, it's a win. But you have to understand, too, they make these things like Columbine High School. What they don't mention is they use pipe bombs. They actually use pipe bombs with their handguns and illegal possession of weapons there. They also made explosives. And again, when I told you I'm a combat engineer, that's one of the things I do. I can go into your kitchen and make a concoction that will level out your house and half your neighborhood. Okay, so for me, I don't need a gun, you know, because I'm trained for a lot more than that. And that's the other thing. How many veterans out there are trained for a lot more than that? So the gun, to me, is a minute issue compared to the damage that a lot of people can do for what we've been trained to do in warfare. And that's where I get the biggest kick of the focus of a gun. Oh, it might kill 20 people at once. Well, I've seen an airplane kill 3,000. You know, I've seen bombs that kill, you know, you have a guy with 100 pounds of C4 in his chest, and he walks into a mall and he blows up. All the glass shrapnel kills like 500-600 people at once. That's not gun control. Okay?
No.
You know, so my attitude is gun control is a funny topic. They already have gun control. It's called the National Firearms Act. American citizens are not allowed to have militarized weapons. They can look like it. That's what they're after now, is the ones that look like it.
Yeah.
But if you're not allowed to have a full submachine gun, Thompson submachine gun. You're not allowed to have an M16. You're not allowed to have a missile. You're not allowed to have a surface-to-air missile or you know, you're not allowed to have military munitions. You're not the military. You're a citizen. So a citizen can have anything less than what the military has, and that's fine. And so we already have gun, you know, we already have the gun control. What we don't have is law enforcement doing stuff that's enforcing the laws that already exist. They figure they're going to villainize the tool. You know, the same thing that happened in Connecticut, the same day China, a guy walks in with a knife and he starts dicing up a bunch of people, kids included.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, he used a knife. You know, so what are you going to do? Ban bats? Ban knives? Pretty soon, you know, we're all going to look like we belong to a penal colony with rubber trays and plastic forks and knives.
Yeah,
because
I think that that's what they, you know, would like. But we're going to be fighting against it. Ron, we are out of time. Go to AxisSanctuaryAndChapels.com. And that, from there, you can just go off into all these other areas to different websites and things that Ron has been talking about, Reverend Ronald French from Axis Sanctuaries and Chapels.
Thank you, Ruthanne. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, my friend, for coming on.
That was a quick hour.
It was, I know. Well, have a great weekend.
You too. You take care.
We'll talk soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tatiana Marquezio, and we're back with second half of Feed Your Head with Joe McAvoy. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Sister Ruth Ann. How are you?
Hey, my brother. Your voice is sounding better.
It's getting much better, yes.
I do want to tell the listeners that he is not in pain.
No, I don't know.
He may sound like it, but he's not. Joe has had that flu that so many of you have had, and his was horrendous for 2 weeks, and now he is, his voice is still recouping.
Right, but no pain.
No pain. But
thank you for inviting me on your show tonight.
Well, you've got the whiskey rough voice, and then if you still have a little squeak here and there, that'll be a good combination. Why not? Joe is at www.worldwidehippies.com, and this is such a good magazine. It's online every day, and you get up at some early hour to get it out.
Anywhere from 4:30 to 6 in the morning. I go sometimes till midnight.
What time do you try to have it out?
I try to have our first post out by 7 o'clock in the morning.
7, okay.
And then we'll have posts going sometimes all the way, sometimes we'll go 24 hours. But we start the new cycle for us starts at 7 in the morning.
Okay, And when did you get started with this, Joe? And what brought it about?
Well, the website's been up, Worldwide Hippies, for 3 years now. I had been previously 30 years plus in the newspaper business. And after seeing the big decline in the newspaper business, and the staffing all gone down, and the new way that they do news, I chose to leave there and try something online. My first intention was to start a social network for old hippies. So I started over 50 hippies. And, but very quickly found that there was more people of all ages, and it seemed like the niche was calling for much more than just like nostalgic, retro, old hippies telling stories. I decided to bring my news experience into it and actually start an online zine to give alternative news, actually taking out from where newspapers used to provide with news, local, world, taking that because they don't do much of that anymore, and bringing it online.
Well, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought,
But that's what we do about.
So, okay, you first it was going to be for aging hippies, and then it just sort of took off on its own. But
it took off because it just seemed like the feedback that I was getting. People wanted more than just a social network for hippies.
Right, right.
And honestly, I was missing the news business and thought that I could do a good job myself online, bringing people who not necessarily are in the news business, but do blogging or reporting from all over the world, getting them to, or providing for them an outlet for their work.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the citizens or citizen journalism comes in. But you yourself, you just like late at night or very early in the morning, like you say, if you get up at 4 o'clock, you're searching news from around the world to.
We have I have over 300 news feeds coming in to my office, and what I have to do is. Obviously, I can't go through them all, but I'll try and search for certain things that I think are topical or aren't being covered. As the news cycle goes, a story can come in and out of the cycle within 16 hours. It was a big story, now it's gone.
And what I try to do is keep some of it going. So that, like, an example would be Bradley Manning and what he's going through. We've been following that story all along, whereas the mainstream media tends to drop it or actually mislead people with information on what's happening with him. So we're kind of filling in where I feel mainstream media drops the ball.
Yeah.
I'm up early in the morning and I have to find where I can get accurate information about it and put it up online where I'm thinking somebody might be interested in this, but I know it's not going to be covered that day or not covered in the correct way. Zach, I answer your question.
Right. Well, yeah, so you have to be quite judicial in ways. I mean, you just to figure out what you are going to talk about and what you aren't. And then you always have some funny little beginning for things, and you just intersperse humor.
I try to have some fun with it, otherwise I would just go crazy. But I also believe in using the media. You don't have to always be serious to get a serious point across.
Mm-hmm.
Right up front, I'm an activist, have been all my life, and that is what this is about. And
yeah.
I'm active in providing what I feel is a talent I have in news gathering and disseminate and getting that out there, but at the same time, trying to encourage people to get active themselves.
Well, now, you're trying to get more citizen journalists, I know.
Yeah. This is where the site has evolved. Worldwide Hits is a great site, but we're tending to become more heavily news, which I like. But it tends to break away from the hippie niche and become more of media. So we also have our media end of Worldwide Hippies is the Citizen Journalist Exchange. And that is where we get stories and we have our own writers. We have our own researchers. And we provide original content. And we have anywhere, depending on the time of year, we've had up to 18 writers in a single week. Right now we are averaging about 8. And it's become real popular and relevant. So we are eventually going to split Worldwide Hippies, still keep that site, but keep it more true to the hippie genre, for lack of a better word, and actually move the Citizen Journalist Exchange to its own website, where journalists, professional and amateur, from all over the world, can then have an outlet for their work.
Okay. Because I saw that you were wanting people who would do videos or blogs.
Yes. Because we have that now, I just would like more of it.
Yeah.
It could be a 24-hour online news thing. But the news that you will be getting rather than aggregated news in a mixture of original content. My goal is to have 100% original content from volunteer correspondents all over the world.
That will be wonderful. I mean, just people who are writing about what's going on for them that they're seeing, they're being involved in.
Yes, and that's where it ties in with social networking also, because the technology is now here. I'm using it every day. And an example would be I have 8 people on my staff right now to volunteer that are regular contributors, original content, and do several things. But I've not met any of them face to face. We've been working for years together.
Yeah.
Through internet. And I've had times, people from Great Britain be on the staff, and they were producing videos each week on news from a British point of view. And so this is what I want more of. But then to stay with the Citizen Journalist Exchange and break away from Worldwide Hippies.
I think technology has just done so much for us, because just like you said, you've worked with them for years. You know these people. but yet you've never met them face to face in the same room. You've met them on Skype and things, but in the same room, no.
No. And you develop relationships that are they're strong, and because you do have a lot of contact with these people, it isn't necessary to be in the same room. You can have group meetings. We have several online places where we meet as a group, so that you know, I mean, everything is there, and we use it. I want to encourage people listening now that there's so much out there that you're not aware of. You don't need to be counting on CNN for your news when the person standing next to the CNN cameraman or reporter who has their own agenda is a person who is much more aware of what's happening there and that could provide a better story, more enlightening and more honest than mainstream media by having these volunteers but also vetted. You're getting something from where a person has a passion for what they're doing rather than a paycheck.
Well, they're getting recognition, but they're also not being funded by mainstream media, and you know, which we know is owned by maybe six corporations. So they're not told what to say. I mean, this is totally their truth. It's what's
right.
Happening as they see it, as they feel it, as they live it.
Right, which I think is a better representation overall, even if they're not professionals, but. I do want to be clear, too, that, you know, I do intend on having professionals work for me also. There's professionals that are working for me now, so it's not like we're trying to break away from professional journalists either.
Oh, right. Well, right. I mean, you don't want somebody to, you don't, I mean, you can't really, you don't have the time or energy, I would think, to take on somebody who may have a good idea here or there, but they really can't write and et cetera, et cetera.
Right, and that's where we need good editors to help them. If somebody shows willingness and has a talent or has some training or just is willing to work hard at something, we will provide them with training. At the same time, trying to keep a distance between us and them in regards to opinion. I don't want to become a CNN or a mainstream media outlet. It operates the same way as they do. I want it from their point of view and try as hard as we can not to contaminate their way of seeing things or their way of writing.
Well, I mean, you're not going to say, okay, I want you to write me a story saying this.
Right, exactly. Well, now we can, and we also, sometimes we work as a group come up with an idea or maybe cover something at a certain slant. But it still is, you know, it's up to the person who wants to do the story. They have control over the story. I do vet our writers for accuracy. But I'm not going to edit for content.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It may seem like something that's easy, but it's not. Because as an activist and as a human being, I have my own perspective, my own biases that I bring to my work every day, even if I try not to. So when you're bringing people on board that are writing and they're from another country or even another state, I don't want to contaminate them with my opinions and my interpretation of their writing. But it's hard sometimes because I maybe didn't really think this is bad, not in the way that it's written, but in their opinion of something.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's clear and it's precise and can be vetted as being accurate, I have to run this. And this is the big difference, I feel, in why we are different on the Internet. This is a conscious thing every day that anybody that's with the organization, I expect the same thing from them. But again, you know, it's easy to say, but we're all human beings, and we all bring our own attitudes and opinions, and you know, and sometimes, and I've lost good writers, lost bad ones too, but be because of things like that, where they're trying to interject too strong their opinion on other people's writing.
Yeah, I mean, and that I think would be very hard when you have quite an opinion on something and theirs is different.
Right, but if they can be, if their writing is cognitive and you read it, you're saying, I can see this point of view. You know,
yeah.
I don't agree with it, but I can see where this person is coming from. As for this website, I feel I have to run it. And I have to not, this is the hard part. The hardest part is not to let that, my feelings get out to that writer.
Yeah.
I still have to interact with that writer as their editor. And
yeah.
I don't want to, and it's so easy for us to do that with the, you know, the turn of a phrase, you know.
Yeah.
The roll of the eyes, you know. And it's hard not to do that. Because,
I'm sure.
You know, at 30 years in the business, I see how much the influence of rank has in media. And one thing that I just don't want is I don't want to have the negative aspect of that contaminating my website. So I push very much for people to write what they believe.
Yeah. Well, now, what kind of things, you personally, when you're scouring through the papers or flipping through shows, what do you not care to put in the paper yourself?
I stay away a lot of sports. We don't cover sports.
Okay.
You know, so that's an important story. Yes. I feel sports is its own niche, and I've always felt this about newspapers too. That the sports section a lot of times just drives sales. And if somebody wants to be a very meaty news organization, they should give more meat. Now, that's not saying that there's anything wrong with sports. But it does. It's one area we don't tend to cover. If something is, now, politics, even though I don't really like politics, it's politics affects everybody's life. And not only U.S. politics, but what's going on in Europe is affecting our lives here. What's going on here affects people's lives in Europe. So I do have to bring politics in every day. It seems like, even though I would rather not, other areas that we don't cover is for news, for these, we're not going to cover much of like TV coverage and, you know, the Academy Awards.
Okay.
Stay away from that stuff. And again, it's not to say anything against that. It's just for me, I'm trying to make the Citizen Journalist Exchange primarily very much news. People can go there and know what they're going to get.
Right. You can actually get a grasp on. You're not interested that much in sports and entertainment.
Right, right. Now, Worldwide Hippies or even on Citizen Journalist Exchange, if somebody can provide information in an entertaining way, I want that above anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they want to do a video, I mean, we have Hippie TV news and stuff, which is really kind of tongue-in-cheek, but every show has meat in it. It's very important information, but you would have to say it's kind of a comedy show. But really, there's a lot of thought that goes into that, and there's always a theme trying to drive a certain point or provide a certain amount of information that isn't getting covered, or when it gets covered, it may be boring, that is still important. And we go back to politics, for example. You know, it can be boring. So you got to present it in a way that gets people to listen. And knowing the media business the way that I do, I'm not trying to get to change anybody's mind, or I'm not going to try and pretend like one story's going to change anything. But it's the counterweight to the media that provides such little information to then give at least is the place where you can get some information. It's provided in a funny and entertaining way. Maybe people will remember a little bit. They'll hear a buzzword, they'll get a little click, or they'll look further into the subject.
Right.
That is really the most I can hope for.
Well, then that's it. Just a little bit here, a little bit there, and then, like you said, all of a sudden, then the lights may go on. What are your favorite topics yourself when you're there again, scouring through, picking what you're going to do for that day? What stories are you drawn to?
First thing I check is I'll check at least like 30 alternative news sites before I'll check any mainstream. I won't look at Reuters or UPI or AP. So after I've gone to really at least 20 or 30 other alternative sites that I know are very informative,
mm-hmm.
and I'll go and I'll see what they're doing, and I'll see if I'm going to aggregate their news stories in. I'll see something will pop out at me, and I'll grab that, knowing that I only have so much space. I'm only going to put up so many posts a day. I'll take that, and I'll put it, I call it my For Now track. So I have, and I'll move that across to the side that I may run this, and I'll even put it in, what I call slug it. It'll be ready to go. I'll put it in my WordPress and get it ready to go, just like it's going to go.
Right.
And I may end up with 20 stories that day that I want to just get in my first news brief, which I'm going to try and keep to at least or at most 9. So then I'll edit those, which seems interesting to me or maybe timely for something else that may be going on. An example would be if there's something coming up in Congress, a certain bill or something that's going to be passed. I'll just use for example, they were going to bring ERA back and start discussing that in the Senate. I would definitely be looking at more feminist websites that morning to see where they're coming from and use something there. So it's deliberate,
right.
But it's based off of something else they know is happening. Another thing would be like with the Gulf Coast, that when the stories come up that, you know, BP is paid a fine or something like that, I'll go and I'll look for more things. I will actually search them for people that have blogs down in that area to what's happening. And then run it that BP is paying a little fine, but then run with it. Maybe something like the shrimpers down there. They can't even eat their own shrimp. You know, so that'll lead me into how I'm going to pick stories for that day.
Right.
So am I explaining that? Do you understand how that works? So, you know, just pick a lot, but also let the information kind of guide me.
Yeah, exactly. Because you could start off with some idea, but then, like you say, in these 20 or 30 sites you go to, you can see what might be really the top for the day.
Yeah. And then I'll go to the mainstream sites, see what they're doing, because sometimes what they're presenting as news is news, if that makes any sense to you.
Right.
The manipulation in the media is not just the U.S. Like you said, there's only 5 companies that run this thing, and they all have motivations that are not your interest is not one of them.
Yeah.
Your money is, but your interest is not one of them. So when you go and I go and look at mainstream news, from having 30 years in the news business with a Fortune 500 company, I know where their mind is. And that's probably this is where I break away from somebody who was just maybe blogging or something. I know where they're coming from to begin with. So I know what to look for when they're misleading somebody in the story. That's when I'll take the story and I'll put a little comment with it, maybe 1 or 2 lines with it. Just trying to point, again, to something that, because people are, no matter what, even though we hate mainstream media, people still, it's in their psychology to trust it. So by presenting, here's what mainstream media is saying, and then adding a few lines of truth with it, people can see the irony themselves. and then maybe look at other places.
Yeah, but yeah, it's one of those things like they used to say, well, it's in writing, so it must be true, and you know, or hey, they said it on Fox. It's got to.
Yeah, the newest meme that they use is they quote each other.
Yeah. Endlessly.
It is so blatant to somebody that's in that business. In other words, I'll make a story. Somebody will report on my story. Then I can quote them. If they give me a good thing on my story, I quote them, and it's like you create your own reliable sources. And it's and it's not even with malice they do it. It's all money. By doing that, you don't have to research. You don't have to spend money on qualified people to pull stories together. You can pull these things up very fast. And by using these formulas, just keep the news flowing, even though it's not news. But again, a lot of times it's not. Sometimes it is evil intent. But most of the time, it's all about the money. And it's all about the whole media, mainstream media, being so homogenized and actually dumbed down because there's very few people doing it.
Yeah.
People realize, an example would be, when I started in the newspaper business, there was 2,000 people that worked at the newspaper that I worked at. When I left there was less than 300.
Wow.
Now, and this this is a big paper. So imagine this is just multiply of how much talent has moved off over the last, especially the last 20 years, in news gathering. It has become all homogenized very quick and formulated, and accuracy is not important.
Right.
They feed off each other, create their own stories, and because we're now getting used to the news cycle, you expect to see it gone. Stories start, but they never finish. Another story comes along. And as long as they never finish, nobody can ever say that the story was wrong. Because it's never been finished.
Okay. That's just tricky.
And it also helps them legally.
Sure.
Here's a big revelation that your listeners may be shocked about. I can remember the day, it was a very sad day for me, when the memo come down. The newspaper I was working at would no longer do any investigative reporting.
Oh.
Now, this happened across the country. There are very, very few newspapers that do investigative reporting. We think they do, but they don't. They used to. They don't. People just aren't there anymore, and they don't want to have the legal problem. So quite often, that's why they'll go and they'll use one of the news services. Because I can print a lie, even if I know it's a lie, as long as somebody printed it before me.
That's just so sad, because I used to read those books about the reporters and all, and it seemed so glamorous, and they were always, you know, rushing off to do this and that, and now that's just not happening, like you said. That from 2000,
the ones that are still working are in such fear of their jobs. They're afraid.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to have a conspiracy to have like-mindedness. They know what's going on around them. You know, so they do know it's like, you know, you can go a little bit with a story, push it a little bit. That's going to help the company sell, but you don't go too far. And they walk that fine line. But nobody has to sit them down and tell them that.
Right, but they know. I mean, they've seen other people get fired, and they're not stupid. So
right, and they got bills to pay, like all of us.
Exactly. I mean, they've got their families, their bills. That's so sad, because I think at one time it was a very honorable profession.
I wanted to work so much at a newspaper, so much. It was months and months and months of going back 2-3 times a week. I was so much just like freedom of the press, you know, doing something good. And actually, when I got in, it used to be quite a bit that way. And the camaraderie was there.
Yeah, the newsroom.
All that's gone now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the newspapers aren't even put together in this country anymore completely. People don't understand that either. A lot of the newspaper you see is built in India. And then
my God,
over
isn't,
in DC.
That's ridiculous. You know, I like old movies, and so I see the newsrooms occasionally in those, and it still seems like such a glamorous. I mean, like what a time it was. I did not realize
And honorable.
Mm-hmm. And honorable, but I did not realize that what you just said, that the newspapers are put together in India.
Yes, they are put together. A lot of it actually. I started the newspaper that I worked for. I helped them convert from film to digital, and I was a digital imager. And I wore a lot of hats in the newspaper. We were from freelance photography, repress, digital imaging, photo editing. But anyway, so I was doing digital imaging, and that was a big thing because to get digital photographs to print well is a real art and a science. And but all that now is being done in hubs where people were trained by people like myself and then are paid half of what should get. And they're just put in these hubs and that's where they're done. So they may have a hub in, for an example, there may be a hub in Illinois which is doing all of the photographs for the whole Southwest. And they do them almost in real time because everything's done over the Internet. So a photographer can send the photos to that hub in Illinois. They take the photo to the photo editing there, slide it into a blank, and send that piece of the page to X amount of newspapers that are buying it or that are owned by them. Or paid for that service.
My goodness. No, wow, I had no clue.
And your advertisements, too. A lot of your display ads in your newspaper aren't done here. They're done in India. They're really come over here, been trained how to do it, and it's just done all over the Internet. And it's done where, you know, these used to be good jobs. And
yeah.
The professional jobs here, they're gone.
That is amazing. I know you said that you've been an activist all your life. What kind of activism? What causes? What are the issues that get you going?
My primary causes has always been war. And speaking truth that you know is truth. And which sometimes is not easy to do, especially when we're working in the news business. But really, anti-war has been, you know, if we had to pick one thing, that's my thing. The stupidity and the lies, the way it permeates our whole culture. To the day I die, hopefully, if I'm still capable, I will be speaking truth that war is no good and it only profits those who always profit.
So war, like fighting against war is a big one.
That's the one thing that I'm personally, even if I wasn't running the online zine, I would still be very much active, maybe in other ways.
Yeah.
Be demonstrations or whatever. And speaking out on, I'll go back to even Vietnam of how there's nothing new going on here. All there is a lot of things that never was settled. And this is where, you know, back in the 60s, I was very active. And I was a hippie. And the same problems are still here. And I think, but what leads it all, or maybe not leads it all, but a part of what stops problems being solved is wars. They take not only lives, but they take fortunes, and they take talent. They give back nothing, but it touches everybody, even people that have never been exposed to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't realize how much they are affected by it and are paying for it.
Oh yeah, definitely. So right, I mean, if we didn't have war, we're not saying everything would be perfect immediately, but it would sure be better, and then we could work on the other issues. And
yeah,
we would
because
have
a lot of issues can't be dealt with because the money's not there or the
exactly.
Not there.
That's it. If we stop funding using more than 50% of our money on wars
and our brain power. Roseanne, it's just as big as the money is the loss of talent.
Yes. Yes. That's true
and,
too.
And so, I don't think I'm going to stop anything, but I can speak what I know to be truth. And when people are debating how to fix things, and they're not bringing the war into it, the arguments and the debates are spurious because the war is the underlying of everything. Even this gun crap that's going on with the gun debates and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The culture of war that puts these images in these people's minds. You know, who parades carrying arms and toys and the violence on television and the way we always build a military and how their guns are made to look that way. Because it has an effect, and then little kids see it, and they play army, you know, then they grow up.
Right. The first little toy that particularly little boys, the little girls get is a gun. Sorry.
Yes.
Maybe not the first, but the second. You might get a truck, and then you get the gun.
Yeah, exactly, and it's acceptable. It should not be acceptable.
No. No, that doesn't... It doesn't work, and so many things are played out on the battlefield, whether it's religion or the economy, whatever. But we know that basically, it's all because more than a few corporations are making tons of money off of war, and they don't want it to stop.
Right. They don't want it to stop. I would expand on that a little bit to say. It's not the corporations. Sometimes we get lost in that word. It's the people who own them.
Yes.
The corporation is not a person.
Yeah, no,
it's a tool that they use.
Yeah.
Oh, but these are people. These are people who are thinking people. Some of them may even be good people. But they're just delusional because they're reaping the rewards off of the death of the sheep.
Right. The profit is so great, and that is the stated purpose of a corporation is to make profit for the owners, for the shareholders.
Right.
And so that's what they do, and they do it quite well.
They do it very well, and they do it. How to say the truth of the matter is we all know it. It's not done righteously.
No.
And it's not. And most of it's not even done legally.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
you know,
let's admit, we live in a lawless country.
Yeah, yeah. The whole legally, that term anymore just sort of makes me sick because we see what the government has been doing that's not according to our laws. And yet, you know, if one of the citizens jaywalks, they can...
Yes.
Well, prison corporations, you know, they want you to be in their prison. So anything that we do now will...
And they just keep making more and more laws because...
Right, right. Stupid laws. But, yeah, and they, with their, three strikes and all that, that was the prison corporation's backing. I mean, they lobby everybody. They promise their shareholders, you know, what, 90-some percent fill rate on the prison.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just so bizarre. In this country, you've seen the percentages. I mean, we have so many more people, percentage-wise, in this country in prison than any other country in the world.
Yeah. Including communist countries that we always point to as being so bad.
Right, right. And if that doesn't, you know, seem way too bizarre. But, yeah, I sometimes I just have to laugh because otherwise I'm afraid I would cry and not stop. I mean, this is nothing like the country I thought I was growing up in.
I agree. And there's truth in what you say. It wasn't perfect then either.
Well, no.
But it was different.
It was different. But was it ever what I thought it was, Brother Joe?
No, because you and I both, we went through the indoctrination starting with grammar school.
Yeah.
Or maybe you had the unfortunate indoctrination into the Catholic Church or something, which I went through. And,
I wasn't there, but yeah.
But, you know, it's a whole other story. But we're still fighting the same battles, though. But it's just, things are very different now. The technology, for one thing, is much more strong. And Big Brother is much more in control. There's much more freedom in the 60s than there is now. People may not believe that, but try and do something, and you'll find out.
Yeah.
And it's the same problems. And it's the same, the violence and the wars. Violence and the wars. It just permeates underneath everything and nothing else gets solved. Nothing gets solved. It just keeps going on. Now we are, I do believe, we are in a perpetual state of war. We don't call them wars, necessarily. But we're in a state of war. Every president has their own little war. You know, and this is something that before anything can really change, that has to stop, and the corruption with it has to stop.
Oh.
Big call for change, but those are the things that have to change. And it was the same thing in the 60s, and you know where we should be concentrating on human beings and their well-being. The powers that be are concentrating on human beings, exploiting them.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That concentrating on humans and their well-being is a great idea. You know, I live in Illinois, and you see sort of the shape of the state by the word corruption in the dictionary, because our politicians pretty much. Even years ago when I lived in the West, when I was moving back here to Illinois, people were saying, you know, they were from other countries. I had a lot of people from Africa around. They stayed with us and they were there. They were, you know, saying, oh, gangster Chicago. I mean, everybody knows.
Yes.
That, you know, I mean, around the world they know. And
they know about our federal government now, too, around the world. They know.
Yeah.
Our media doesn't print. But check out, and great about the internet. You can go across seas just by pressing a button.
Yeah.
And you know, go to the Globe or go to the Independent. I mean, there's so many, really, go to RT News. I mean, there's so many outlets beyond the United States.
Yeah.
You're going to get, you know, and they're not perfect either, but you're going to get a different type of information.
Right, no. But I go to them to find out what's happening here.
You have to.
And that just, I mean,
because
like
the media
I just laugh
about
that.
With the politicians here.
But it's so sad. I mean, I should be able to go to the Chicago Tribune or something local and find out what's going on in this country.
Yes.
But no. Yeah, I love RT. There's a lot of different places I go, and I, you know, see something here and there and check around, and then I find out what's going on in the United States.
And, you know, or just type in alternative news sources. Just type it in to any search engine. And there you go. Learn
yeah.
something. Educate yourself. You know, and if nothing else, you know, I heard a story one time about the man that was, he was standing in front of the White House screaming every day. Standing in front of the White House screaming against the war every day. The person come up to him and said, "Don't you know you're not going to change them? Are you screaming out here every day? It's futile for you to stand out here every day and scream." And he said, "That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm letting them know they're not going to change my thinking."
Okay.
So by going to other news sources and educating yourself, it may not change them, but at least you got your own self, you know. And
yeah,
you
yeah.
scream back a little bit. And if you got the truth, all you can do is just rile them, because the truth is the truth. The bell rings.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's people in other countries, I mean, like, you know, nobody's very happy with their own governments. And none of them are happy with our government, and that includes us. So the thing is, I've had people who are very unaware, really, the Fox News watchers, you know, tell me, well, all those people, they hate us, and, you know, our military has to go fight for your freedom, and, you know,
yeah.
and I'm saying,
they
well, they're not fighting for my freedom, but... You know, and I try to explain to them that I actually talk to these people who hate us, and they don't hate us at all. They hate our government.
With good reason.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
with
but...
With good reason.
They,
and it's not giving any credibility to violent people in other parts of the world either. You mean other people, they don't want none of this. They know what's going on. But, you know, I mean, there's good and bad all over the place. But it definitely isn't them hating our freedom.
They feel sorry for us. I mean, and they realize that we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, and it is worldwide.
Yeah, it is worldwide. And so, but if people here just watch this stupid mainstream media, you know, they get that idea that we're hated around the world.
Yeah,
and
it's put there deliberately.
Yeah, I mean, and then...
Here's something your listeners may enjoy. Maybe they knew, maybe they didn't. CNN puts out different writings for the same story for the U.S. and Europe. So they'll leave the information out here, but let it out in Europe. Because in Europe, the other press there is going to get that information out. So they have to include it to be credible.
That's like some magazine cover. You may have seen it on Facebook. There, and I can't remember what magazine it was, but it showed in this country on the cover of it. It had, I don't know, some movie star with her kids or something.
Yeah.
And then it showed three other countries that had something to do with the war kind of thing. You know, I mean, it was totally like for America, they're just dummy it down.
Yeah.
But
exactly. It's never more information here. It's less.
It's always less. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always less. It's always with.
Well,
you know,
I'm astonished.
Always, but it's true. It's always with attitude.
Yeah. But I'm astonished at what some of our friends in other countries know about the history here.
Yes.
You know, it's things that I had to learn after I got out of school because they didn't teach it to me in school. That was a complete...
knowledge over there.
Oh, it was a whitewash, the history that I learned, totally. You know, it was, that's all it was. I mean, it was a bunch of lies. And, you know, I can't be upset because I was thinking about that the other day with the teachers I had because they had been lied to, too.
And they're stuck in it, yeah.
You know, I mean, they weren't just telling us lies to be doing it.
No.
They believed
it. But we can't be naive to think that it was all just done harmlessly.
No.
I mean, I believe very strongly there were people, there's people behind it then.
Oh,
and there's people behind
yeah.
it now that stopped yeah. the information from getting out. But it isn't.
Yeah. I've heard that there's different textbooks. Well, we know that, like, textbooks that go to religious schools are a little different and all this, but I've heard that there's different history books, even for the South and the North in this country.
Yeah.
So everybody wants
the history books are political.
Yeah. All right. So you want to put your spin on it.
And the people that get on the committees that pick the information out, it's politics. And again, it goes back to being corrupt because there's people there with agendas that are trying to change things to their advantage in some way or another.
Yeah.
Rather than being objective. And I mean, you can still have debates between two objective people. That's healthy. When you have manipulation, graft, and corruption that's making the decision, that's when you end up with, like most empires, they end up like we are right now, which is on the edge of a cliff. And it isn't just financial. It's in all areas because it's been so much lying going on.
Well, do you think, Brother Joe, that this empire is definitely on the downhill slide now?
It's just so hard to really see what is a downhill slide.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. But, you know, we've had more than 200 years, and they say 200 years is pretty much it.
I think our empire is had it. But the difference now is there's so much weaponry. There wasn't before. So now, you could destroy the whole globe. So we're talking about empire crash. Now we're talking about the end of the world. Whereas before, you were just talking about the end of the empire.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm
still talking about just the end of the empire. I mean, like, not having as much control as before, or as much say on the world scene. I think that one of the signs was in the UN when 138 countries voted to recognize Palestine.
Oh, yes.
And the U.S. didn't. The U.S., Britain, Canada, and six other little places didn't. So I think that was a big sign.
I think it was a sign, but like I said, I do believe that because we have such a strong military, all this won't come. You know, you can have the little votes in the UN, but honestly, we support the whole UN. So if we took that away, they're powerless. But our military is unbeatable.
Yeah.
So. And we know that the powers that be will exploit us down to the last human being in this country to keep themselves fat and happy.
Right. Now that
includes using that military money.
Well, so what do we do now? What do we do to prevent that, to get some more, some of our rights back?
I think there is no one answer. Things are that bad. But I do believe in the human species very strongly, in a power love. That we know right from wrong. And even though our comfort may really get kind of messed with in the years to come, I think as human beings we'll survive. But it won't be like this. The empire will fall. But hopefully people just by trying to make little changes there in themselves, a lot of little changes make it, just think of, the power of the people. If they were to just take one day off of work, what would happen? We have more power than we believe.
Yeah.
Little things can add up. And I got to say, I just think the power of love. And just be as human beings, that drive to just keep going and say, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. Even if I don't know what's right, I know that's wrong.
Yeah.
And being brave enough to take what comes with that. So, there's only so much they can do to us. So,
yeah, I'm very optimistic myself for humankind and our planet. But I do think they're going to have some really bad times.
There has to be revolution.
Yeah.
There just has to be because otherwise this would continue. And it's just not physically able to continue.
Well, that's true. We've got to do a lot of things differently as far as the environment and a lot. So yes, our lives are going to change, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's going to save the species.
Exactly, and so I mean that's not bad, and people don't need 30 room mansions. I don't care. They just don't need them.
We don't need large anything.
No, we don't need crap. All this consumerism stuff is just ridiculous.
What happens at the breakdown at the end of any empire, when they call it chaos, they call it anarchy, but it always turns out to be the same thing. At the end of any great empire, when the people are left to fend for themselves, they end up in small groups helping each other.
Yeah.
And then it always leads us back to the civilization. But the breakdown is always the same. So to me, it's not anarchy. To me, it's not chaos. To me, it's nature. And nature says we survive best when we work as small groups for the betterment of the group.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about with socialism, like worker-owned industries and things. Just people working together, owning it, making a living. You don't have to make a big, big profit off of it. It can work. And we're
it
actually...
It can work. It can
more.
Work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the more we reach out in just little ways to the people around us, don't try and change the world. Just try to change your atmosphere, man.
Yeah. You know? Because by so doing...
Yourself, you have that control. Instead of barking when we're angry, back it off a little bit.
Politics. If you don't like certain things about, well, get involved. Get involved locally. Get on the school board. Change is going to come from the bottom. It doesn't come from the top down.
Ever.
No, it doesn't.
It always ends up the same way. This way I see it anyway. I'm sure other opinions, but I just see it. We're always our own salvation, and it's never the person on the next block. It's the person next door.
Yeah. That's, our time's about up. I want to say that if you go to www.worldwidehippies.com and you get really good news and some funny comments and things.
And TV news and stuff will be coming back in February.
Right. We didn't get into it. Yes, we're going to have news coming on.
People can go to our YouTube channel, theworldwidehippies.com, and see what we've done in the past, and they'll get an idea what's coming up.
Right, the end of February. So that's going to be fun. And if you go to worldwidehippies.com, you can see what Brother Joe's been talking about here about the citizen journalism.
Yes.
So if you have talent or desire, whatever, for writing, for editing, for doing videos, anything, we urge you to get involved.
You can get involved and we'll help any way that we can. Just get into it.
Yeah. And the next time that Brother Joe's on, his voice is going to be so much better.
Yes. That's
thanks for
thank
coming
you very
on.
Much.
Thank you so much. You have a good weekend.
I'll talk to you soon, sister.
Okay, sister. Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.